Hi, this is Tanya Nayak, and you're listening to The Break. I love when I hear that someone is equally as nice as they are successful. Well, that is my friend Lauren Roush. He is a Senior Vice President of Programming and Development for Discovery. You guys, this is the guy. He's the one that makes the decisions as to what shows are going to air and which aren't. If you ever thought about pitching a show to the network, it's got to get by Lauren first. We had an awesome conversation, starting from childhood, from bullying, and how that got channeled into something positive. We talked about passion and the direction and focus that that took on his career. I'm so excited for you guys to listen to this conversation. I think you will be extremely motivated, inspired, and it restores the faith and the belief that the nice guys can finish first. Thanks for doing this with me.
Of course. Thank you. So Are you happy. Kidding?
No, you know what?
Famous and successful people. It's like, I hope someone wants to listen to me.
Hello. Are you serious right now? First of all, when this whole thing was coming to be, you were truly one of the first people that popped into my head as far as like success stories and someone who follows their heart and their passion.
Oh,
and,
thanks.
You know, and then I also, because we're such good friends and we've known each other for so long, I also do know, I actually don't know a lot of the details about the struggles, but I know that there were some. So I'm kind of like excited to tap into that a little bit.
And I, you know, I'm an open book. You could literally talk about anything. So whatever you want to talk about, I'm game for. So it's all good.
Well, I will obviously set this up for the listeners, but for anyone that's listening in right now, I wanted to bring you on here to talk about your journey as an executive at HGTV and Discovery. So you're Senior Vice President of Programming and Development. So tell people what it is that you do.
Well, basically, I oversee the programming team at HGTV, which means that we are the team that comes up with the concepts for new shows, or we take pitches for concepts for new shows. And then we oversee them through both the development phase, which is when we're trying to figure out what a show is, and then all the way through to a pilot, which is the first episode, and then a series, which is what you see when you're watching television. And so we're trying to make sure that the shows that you see on HGTV represent the brand that we are and hopefully are what our viewers want to see. And so it's an amazing job. I love what I do because it's both creative and a bit of research and a bit of data and a bit of business, but it's all kind of combined into one nice little package. And the end result is a fun thing that millions of people get to watch when they turn on their televisions. What we do find with our shows is our viewers tend to like what I call blue skies and happy endings. You end up really wanting to watch HGTV for the beautiful reveals, for the incredible like friendships that you feel like you're forming with our hosts and our talent like yourself, with someone's specific design style. Like you watch us for the only drama that we really want you to see is if a pipe bursts halfway through the process, you want to be part of it or the drama that comes from construction. But we're not a network that would ever pit people against each other. We're not looking for the fights. Like that's not our sweet spot. There are other places that you could find that.
But it seems like what's doing really well right now, and I'm sorry, I'm digressing. I have no agenda, Lauren, by the way. I just want to chat with you. So we'll probably go all over the place. As you're following people's lives and their stories, you know, some of the stuff that happened with Allison on Windy City Rehab, or even like Tarek and Christina, like their stories, that seems to captivate hardcore. So
well, you also really care about the people that you see on our networks. I always say the one thing that you'll find with our talent, they're the types of people that we run into at the airport, and you could probably identify with this. We want you to feel so comfortable that you feel like they are your friends. Mm-hmm. And so when your friends are going through stressful times at work, like what Allison has gone through, you want to be part of it because you want to root for her. You want to see what she's going through. When it's Tark and Christina, who are such a staple of our network, their family kind of became our family. So you do want to see what they're going through. What you won't see on our networks are people throwing drinks in each other's faces or people fighting for the sake of fighting or a table getting flipped over because that's not the reason why you watch. But you certainly want to get to know the types of people that are representing us, their stories, what they're going through in their lives. I mean, Allison's kind of broke my heart just because you were watching someone whose life was really in a very crazy place. And she was willing to be an open book and just let the cameras roll and just really experience it in front of all of us.
Well, that's one of the biggest changes I've seen from the beginning of time when I was starting with the network like 20 years ago to now is not being a host, but being your authentic true self.
That's the single biggest thing that has changed on our network is that when you started, the shows were concepts that we created to be television shows. So you were slotted in as a host and this one's theme was Destination Design or this one's theme was Rate My Space or whatever the different themes of the shows were. What we've switched over to now is we tend to follow real businesses or real processes of what designers, realtors, renovators, preservationists are going through. Or if it's going to be a format, it's a flat out format like a competition show, Battle on the Beach, which you are also on. Those shows you're watching for the drama, the excitement, the prize, the stakes. And so you know that that's formulated, but we're not doing as many shows that are just a clever format idea or a pitch, because I think people really have resonated with watching the real life businesses and the real processes of the designers and people that we have on our air.
I've known you now for probably 20 years, right?
Almost 20 years, isn't it? It's been 15 years.
But when I met you, you were my programming director, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was for Design to Sell.
It was the first show that I ever oversaw at HGTV was your show. And the fact that we are still working together is a minor miracle in the world of content.
Television.
It's so incredible that we're still doing this.
True. That's so true. And I mean, I'm so thankful, you know, that all the time. Like, I just can't even believe it. I know I've had this like longevity in this career and you've had this longevity in this career, but I've been watching you rise and rise and rise and rise. And it couldn't make anybody who knows you happier to see the success happen for you, you know, and one of the things that we always say is like, you and I, we're always like, we're two of the nicest people, you know, you never hear us talk about anyone. We're always like, unless it's like behind closed doors, maybe on occasion, a little bit, really nothing bad, as Sabrina would say, where we never give her anything.
On our worst day, Sabrina would say that it's better than she is on her best day. So we're not too mean.
That whole journey that you've been going through, you're just one of the nicest people. And I feel like there's such a misconception about success and being nice.
You and I have talked about this before, and I think that one of the misconceptions is that nice people are weak people, but I think you can be both nice and smart, or be nice and have an opinion, or nice and take chances, or nice and good at your job. And I think that, not to pat our own backs, I don't mean it like, aren't we great? But I also think that if you're a nice person, even if you have the occasional show that doesn't rate or the occasional idea that doesn't work, if people like to work with you, they want to give you another chance. They want more opportunities. And so I think sometimes being nice offers longevity if you can back it up with strength of character, knowing what you're doing and all of the stuff that goes along with it.
Right, right. And like for you, I know your history dates way back to game shows, right? Was that the first, was that your first TV gig, like Love Connection or something like that?
My first internship when I was still in college was at Family Feud in the contestant office. And I would just sit in this office and call people all day long and sign them up to audition to be on Family Feud.
Wait, Richard, what was his name?
With Ray Combs was his name, was the host at that time. Okay. And then there was also a show called Classic Concentration that I did the same thing for, that was hosted by Alex Trebek. And I was obsessed with game shows, like absolutely obsessed with them. And so
before
I went back to college
or after?
Before.
Oh, okay.
So what happened with, the way that I got my first internship is I knew I wanted to do something in television. I thought I wanted to be a game show host. That's what I thought I wanted to do for a living. But I wasn't sure how to get in because I think I'm the only person from Los Angeles who has no family members in the entertainment industry. It's literally like I'm from the place where it's like the thing and no one is in the business.
Don't you? Because I swear your mom, she should have been.
She should be in
the famous. Yeah, still too. Yeah.
I would watch my favorite shows and I wrote down the name of the production company that was at the end of one of the game shows that I watched, which was Mark Goodson Productions. Mm-hmm. And I called them cold as a 19-year-old sophomore in college. I mean, this is so strange looking back. And I said, do you have any internships? And I think I was so chipper and I sounded so like infectiously excited about it.
Yeah.
But they said, actually, tell me more. And so I told them about myself and that I was interested in game shows and that I had appeared on Wheel of Fortune in high school. And so they
as a contestant, liked it
as a contestant on Teen Week. And I went in and I did an internship and it turned out to be wonderful. And when I graduated from college, there was an ad in Variety magazine, which who thinks you could ever get a job from an ad at 21 years old? Right. And it said game show contestant coordinator. And I sent them a resume saying that I had done 2 summers of working at Family Feud and Concentration. And I got a job as a contestant coordinator on Love Connection at 21 years old. Tanya, I had not even been on a date. I was a virgin. I had not even had no experience of any sort. And I was matchmaking couples on Love Connection.
That is so funny.
And then I went from game show to game show for a while as a contestant coordinator. I was specifically picking contestants to be on game shows. And I felt at some point like it wasn't the best use of me. I felt like it was using my personality, but I wanted to use my ability to write and to tell stories. And I really wanted to be a producer. And so I was able to segue that through a number of other opportunities that came my way and became a daytime talk show producer. And eventually was the supervising producer of Good Day LA, which was the morning show in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And then that just led to a lot of opportunities, including HGTV, which is where I am now.
Can we sidebar for a second about this Love Connection bit? Because religiously watch it. I was probably, you're only a few years older than me. So if you were
I worked there for the 91 and 92 season. It was when you were probably just about to start college.
Yes, exactly. I graduated high school in 91. You're right. But I was obsessed. Was it as real as it was? Like what? Give me the inside scoop.
Do you want me to tell you a really horribly embarrassing story about this? Because I was on Love Connection before I ever worked there. I was in college. I had turned 21 senior year. And I applied to be on Love Connection. And I thought I was straight at the time.
That was my next question. I'm like, what? A lot has changed.
And I was selected as what's called the selector, which is the person who gets to pick who they date. And I picked this, her name was Melanie Lapadula. I still remember her name to this day. Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That doesn't surprise me. You have the weirdest, most photographic memory. So weird. Melanie Lapadula, are you out there?
We went on a date and it was real. We went to Griffith Park and we went horseback riding and
did
all this stuff. They gave you $75. Our episode never aired.
No.
They never aired our episode, I swear. And so tell anyone when I auditioned or when I interviewed for the job 6 months later, when I graduated college and auditioned for the job at Love Connection. And I was so excited to go look at my application because my job was when you interviewed someone to be on Love Connection, you'd be taking notes about them and writing like great personality, you know, bubbly, blah, 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 blah. I could not wait to see what they said about me on the notes. And it said, great personality, a little light in the loafers, question mark. They called me out.
No.
They literally called me out as gay before I even had come out or knew about it. And they put it on my application.
What did you say?
I cried.
You cried? Oh my God.
I cried because I was like, am I that like transparent? I didn't even come out until I was 26. I had 5 years after that of dealing with this and Love Connection knew about it the whole time.
Light in the loafers. Ridiculous.
And light in the loafers. That's mark. So rude.
That's so rude. Then let's just take a trip down memory lane now because I know we're laughing about it now. And I know that childhood, elementary school, I'm guessing, 10, 11, 12.
Junior high. More like 12, 13, 14, 15. It was really tough. I was very sensitive as a kid, like to the point where my dad used to say, if I even look at you a certain way, I would have like tears in my eyes. I was just a sensitive kid. And I feel like that was taken as weakness by other students. Thank God I have an amazing family. So the family and the home life was good, which I feel really blessed because I think a lot of people have the reverse, where they feel good with their friends and then they come home to a place they don't feel safe or whatever. Yeah. I had the safety and love at home, but I'd go to school and I was bullied, made fun of, called names. And it was really hard because you don't know what you did to deserve it. You don't know what your flaw or your weakness is that is so apparent to others when you're just trying to fit in, or you're just trying to like have friends, or you're just trying to make it through the day. And so, and I know you've dealt with this too. And you feel like, what are they seeing in me that is worth picking at or pulling apart when you can't even place it within yourself? And so it was hard. Seventh, eighth, and ninth grade, especially, was just awful. I would never want, a lot of people say, would you ever want to relive your childhood? I said, no. I love being an adult. I don't need that again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you found your happy place as an adult. I remember for me in fifth grade, Mr. Scott Petullo's class, every single day. So mind you, and I'm sure you and I've probably talked about this in the past, but I was the only kid that was not, I should say there was one other kid that was Chinese and myself. We were the only two people that were not white in our elementary school, and our lockers were right next to each other. We both had a last name that started with N. And so I remember every single day in fifth grade up until the very last day of school, I would go up to Mr. Scott Petullo and I'd say, can I please switch the classroom? Can I please switch the, I would cry every day. And I would say, please, can I please switch to the other class? Didn't feel good. You know what I mean?
It doesn't feel good. And it makes you feel less than. And all you want to do is either fit in or thrive, of course. But like, you don't want to be pointed out to be belittled. It's a horrible feeling. Once in, I think it was the fifth grade, and this group of boys came up to me and I thought they wanted to be friends. And I remember them just coming up to me and they said, what's worse than a fag in a cage? And I said, what? And they pointed at me and laughed and said, like, fag on the loose. And I just broke down crying. I always gave the response they wanted instead of just standing tall and saying, shut up, or what are you doing? It was always like, I was mad at myself for the weakness that always would come out of these kids. Like, I gave them the response they wanted instead of just walking away or ignoring it. And that's,
but you didn't know. I know you didn't know at that age. And that's the thing. But I actually, and I know that we have kind of touched on this in the past, but I feel like it is the reason why we're compassionate people. I actually wouldn't change it. Would I want to relive it? No. But I wouldn't change it. And you don't know how many times I would fantasize about bringing some of these kids on Sally, Jesse, Raphael to confront your bully. I used to fantasize about that. Is that crazy?
I bet. It's not crazy because it felt like the one safe space you could do it. But I think to your point, like, you're such an empathetic and such a kind person. And I think it's partially because you feel bad for people who are underrepresented or mistreated. I feel the same way. I feel just anyone who's weak. It's funny, when I was in college and I kind of moved beyond the getting bullied phase, I remember I volunteered at a nursing home because I just felt so bad for the old people that got no attention or people made fun of them. Like, it makes you just feel badly for like the wounded bird. You just want to help the people who either can't help themselves or are victimized.
We were talking a little bit about the game show Life, and then you went over to Good Day LA, and you're an executive producer there?
I was the senior producer there. So I was overseeing the non-news blocks. So the fashion shows, the demo segments, some of the health and beauty, and just the kind of the light and fun lifestyle stuff there. And I was there for 9 years. So that was a really awesome experience. And it turned from a local show to a nationally syndicated one. So it was a really great opportunity to go from a fourth place show in Los Angeles to the number one show in LA to a nationally syndicated show. Wow. And it was exhilarating. And the talent that were on the air were wonderful. Like, it was it's a period of my life I will always look back super fondly for. It was great.
So you met David in LA then, right?
Yeah, I was working at Good Day LA and I was shooting a segment at the Beverly Center Mall for great Christmas gifts for $10 or less. And one of the places that we were shooting was at the Restoration Hardware in the Beverly Center Mall because they had bake your own dog biscuits. It was one of the gift items.
Do you realize all of the details that you're recalling? Like the segment, the exact segment title, where it was, the bake your own dog. I mean, that is not normal, Lauren, just so you know.
It isn't?
No.
We also featured a windproof lighter. So those are the two items that were under $10. But David was the manager of the Restoration Hardware store. And we ran into each other three times over the next 5 days as total strangers. And so by the third time, it was so weird that I said to him, I said, whether you believe this or not, the universe wants us to know each other. And he said, I kind of had the same thought.
You said that to
information.
Him?
It just three times in 5 days of running into someone who you don't know in Los Angeles is crazy. Know.
And then you guys got married before gay marriage was legal, right?
Legal. Yeah, we had what we called a commitment ceremony because gay marriage wasn't legal at that time, yet people were starting to have more ceremonies. And so we had our parents walk us down the aisle. Our grandmothers were both there. We threw a big party with dancing. I mean, it was a wedding. We just didn't call it that because at the time we never knew if that would be something that we'd be able to do or not.
And your parents have always been supportive. There's never been any issues with coming out.
The coming out with my dad was 100% easy. From day one, he had no issues and had open arms, which is kind of an unusual story for men, typically. My mom had a really hard time at the very beginning because she saw how it was going to impact her. And she always interpreted her life as being a grandmother. Not that there would ever be a guarantee, even if I was straight, that I would have children. Right. But that was her story.
Of course, that's her perception. Back then.
And having a grand, exactly. And she had two sons. And so she thought, this will be my chance to have the daughter that I never had. She had her own story in her head. And there was nothing wrong with the story. But it was a little hurtful for me at the time because I felt like it wasn't welcoming my story of who I was. But my mom is so amazing that after like maybe a month, I might not have even been that long, she had this realization after talking to some friends and starting to open up about it that, you know, this is what was going to be her life. And it's funny that when I came out to her, I don't remember doing this, but she told me, she reminded me just this year, I sent her a letter in the mail immediately following coming out to her.
And wait, you remember that you sold windless lighters, but you don't remember this letter?
No, and she saved it. And the letter just said, "Dear Mom, the person I was yesterday is the same person I am today and the same person who I'll be tomorrow. So I hope that you could love me as this person." And she saved it. And she said that it triggered something inside of her that like, I've always had so much fun with my son. We have such a good relationship. And she suddenly became fine with it. And now, I mean, talk about somebody who crosses over to the other side. She might as well be like the president of PFLAG. I mean, she loves David. She loves our friends. She loves that I'm gay. She has no issue on any.
No, in fact, she went back to your elementary school with you, right? To talk to kids about bullying.
Yeah, we were
Live Out Loud.
We were
right?
involved that in Live Out Loud. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Live Out Loud is an organization that I was on the board for. It's a nonprofit where there's a program within this organization called the Homecoming Project. And you go back to your high school. In my case, I wanted to go back to my junior high because that's where I had a harder time. And you talk to the students there about your coming out process and about your current life and your successes so that they could see positive role models in LGBT people as adults. And my mom decided to come with me. I invited her and we sat on the panel together. And I think she probably had more questions asked than even me because the kids were afraid of talking to their moms or they didn't know how a parent would react. And it was so incredible because, first of all, kids now are so much more progressive and open-minded than they were back then. But second of all, they were so genuinely curious and interested in our story and in my mom's story that I think it really touched something very deeply inside of her. And so we've now done this twice because it was so meaningful after the first time.
Like what kinds of questions are these kids asking you guys?
Some of them were very sweet and a little sad, like, how old should I be when I tell my family? You know, and we can't answer that question, but they obviously are battling with their own issues. But some of them were just like, is there anything that we should tell our parents to read about coming out? Or what are some of the things they told my mom, like, what are some of the things that took you the most by surprise? And her answer was so interesting to me because she said, she goes, Lauren had 6 months to prepare for the conversation that he was going to have with me. So he had a script in his head. He knew what he wanted to tell me. She said she was blindsided. And so when she heard, her 6 month process of processing it had to start at that moment. And she said, you've got to give your parents time. They're not always going to give you the answer you want second that you tell them. That doesn't mean they won't come around or they won't be there for you. She just needed her time to process. And good I had never thought about it that way. It was a really real, but good answer. Yeah.
The reason I want to kind of go into the bullying side of things with you is because I don't think people talk about it enough. And I feel like there's so many people that could gain something from hearing your story and your journey and all of that. And specifically because of where you are today. And I think it's so awesome because here you are, you're one of the heads of the network right now. And, you know, you say Lauren Roosh, everybody knows who you are by name. Everybody, you know, and that's it's a huge accomplishment. So tell me about the switch over from Good Day LA to HGTV.
Sure. So once Good Day LA went from being nationally syndicated, the national part of it got canceled and it was going back to being a local show. And I felt like I had had that experience. It was wonderful. I was there for a long time, but I knew what I was getting back into. So I was ready for a new adventure. And I saw a listing in Synopsis, which is an industry, kind of like a daily mailing of job opportunities in the entertainment industry. And there was a listing for an executive producer for Scripps Productions, which was the in-house production company for the Scripps Networks, which was HGTV, food, cooking, fine living, you know, a variety of these networks. Mm-hmm. And so I did not look closely, Tanya, at the ad, and I did not realize that it said the job was in Knoxville, Tennessee. I lived in Los Angeles.
You assumed. One would assume.
I just assumed it would be LA or New York, or I didn't even think about it. So I sent my resume in. I have no idea how I got a phone call that they were interested in talking to me. And at that time, I learned that it was in Knoxville. But the guy interviewing me said that he was interviewing something like 20 candidates. And I was one of the atypical candidates because I had not worked specifically in that world, but that he had had a news background and he thought that people worked in news think quickly, write well, they had some of the right characteristics. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted to interview me. We had a great interview. I then had a second interview. And then by the third interview, I told David, I said, I know it's crazy and we're not moving to Tennessee, but I want them to fly me out to Tennessee because I've never been and I want to at least see it. So I'm treating this like American Idol. Like I will get the invite to go to Tennessee.
The golden ticket. Yes.
The golden ticket, the reverse golden ticket. And I did. But what I told him was that if I'm going to come out to Tennessee and interview with the people that I'll be working with every day, I think it's really important that I bring my husband along with me because I need to make sure that we could potentially live in Tennessee.
Well done.
And that it would work for us. Well, you know, my joke, I thought we're getting a free trip to Tennessee. What it turned out to be was us falling in love with it and me wanting the job and us taking the job and us moving to Tennessee.
Something you never thought.
I just felt like I was ready for a new challenge and a new opportunity and a new title.
That was a huge turning point for you in your career. Well,
it was a huge turning point also on a resume because I went from a senior producer title, which is a really nice title. I'm not putting that down, but the job in Tennessee was executive producer. And I remember thinking at that time, nobody could ever take that away from me. Even if I tank, if they hate me, if I'm gone in 6 months, I could at least say to myself, I was an executive producer. And so it was important to me to have a title like that also. And what happened was a stroke of unbelievably fortuitous and wonderful events. And so I had that job. I was producing shows that were airing on HGTV. And the head of HGTV at the time contacted me and said, I really like the shows you're producing. Would you ever want to come to the network side and be a network executive? Which seemed like the ultimate dream job. Right. And so I left the production job. I moved over to the network side. My first show was Designed to Sell with Tanya Nyack and a variety of other cities at the time. Mm-hmm. And the rest is history. I fell in love with the position. I love home programming. My heart and soul is in this. Any, you can ask anybody. I'm so passionate about what I do. And one show turned to five shows, turned to, I've now overseen probably 300 shows over the course of the time that I've been here. Wow. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah. That is crazy. And so then you just kept climbing up the ladder. So
yeah, so you start as a director mm-hmm. and then you become a VP of programming. Then you become an SVP of programming. And then I was called group SVP of programming. And it's like, I can't believe this is my life. I seriously, this is not like me trying to be humble. It's unbelievable sometimes when you step back and realize where you are, because when you're in the weeds, you don't really notice it. You're too mm-hmm. busy working and doing what you're doing that you sometimes have to step back and say, I'm literally living
Holy crap.
I put out there.
Yes.
It's crazy.
The one thing that I think a lot of people would like to know is that, did you have to go out for the job? Did you have to say, put feelers out there and say, I'm ready for a promotion, or I'm ready to move into another level? Or did you just kind of sit back and they came to you and said, you know what, Lauren, we're going to promote you? Like, how did that all work out?
Both. It's a great question, because I was someone who was always wondering what was next. So almost every year on the same month, I put together a business case of why I should be promoted to the next position. And it was not happening. I was too eager. And about 5 years into my stint at HG, there was a mentoring program at HGTV where they paired up a mentor with a mentee. I decided I wanted to be on the mentee side so I could meet with someone at a higher position and really find out the secrets to how they got to where they were going. And I told my mentor at the time, I said, every year I put together a business case, I work so hard, I get good reviews, and they never give me the job. And he said, stop asking for it and just play the part. Be the role you want to be. And so I stopped asking to be a VP of programming, which I had tried like five other times. And I just started being more assertive in meetings, taking on more responsibility, even if it wasn't asked of me. And literally within 5 months, I was offered the job as a VP of programming. And from that point forward, I've never asked for a promotion. I've played the part of where I thought I should be in my career. And then when it's meant to happen, it'll happen. Or you could find it elsewhere, I guess. But for me, it's been really wonderful that it's happened where I want it to happen. And I've stopped asking and just put in the work for it instead.
What I wanted to tell you was, I was watching your mindless chatter last week with Brian Baltazar. So this whole thing is really interesting to me because you are behind the camera most of the time and now you're getting yourself in front of the camera. So how did that feel?
You know, it's really exciting. Last year, a production company, unbeknownst to me, basically pitched a concept for Brian Baltazar and myself to host a talk show on HGTV. But I said, I'm not taking a pitch with myself on camera. That's so self-serving. And I just felt uncomfortable doing it. And so they pitched the president of the network themselves. And she picked up HGTV House Party, which airs on Discovery Plus, which is Brian and myself interviewing designers in our world, celebrities, people that are pop culture experts, but and just a variety of people.
Did that start because of mindless chatter?
Yeah. And so basically, Brian and I did this Facebook Live show. It got the attention of a production company. This production company pitched it to HGTV, the network I work for, but above my level. And the president of the network, who was an amazing human being and person, said, what do we have to lose? Let's go for it. And mm-hmm. we did 8 episodes of a show called House Party.
So
we interviewed it was so fun. People from our world, a bunch of the HGTV stars, Allison Victoria, Tariq Al-Musa, Bregan Jane, just a bunch of people in our world, but also celebrities. Cheryl Hines was on Twitch and Allison, Ellen Fave, design star. A lot of people were on the show. Maureen McCormick from A Very Brady Renovation, mm-hmm. just all these wonderful people. It was an absolute dream. And you can watch it on Discovery Plus. It's on. It's HGTV House Party. But it was such a fun opportunity to do something like that out of the blue.
I would love to kind of wrap this up with maybe a little bit of info for people who will ever have the opportunity to put a pitch together, what is it you're looking for?
You know, I always say in the world of HGTV, it starts with wonderful talent. And I'm not saying this to kiss your butt. I really do think that it starts with people who, when you watch them, you want to either grab drinks or dinner with them, you feel connected to them, or you like their taste. So if you meet someone out there in the world who is really dynamic, who is in the world of home in any way, shape, or form, and who has a unique POV, that's first and foremost. I think the second thing that we look for is, what is their process? There are a lot of people who just call themselves renovators, but what is the unique POV of the person that is on our show? Because you do need to make sure that every show, although they all have beautiful reveals or a great home purchase at the end, they need to still have a unique vibe or a unique kind of tone or unique approach. And then I think like the third thing is just, is this an idea? It's to what you said before. Do you want to sit at home and make this something you would make a destination to watch on a Thursday night at 9 o'clock? There's 400 things out there on television. What is going to make this show interesting or dynamic enough? And it better be a great talent, a great concept, a fun idea, a great payoff. There needs to be some kind of hook that is drawing you in enough that you're willing to give up a half hour or hour of your very busy life to watch it. And that's what I think are the kind of secret sauces to coming up with a pitch for us. We do a development meeting every Thursday, and there are a very small percentage of shows, maybe 20%, that just everyone hates. So those you throw away. There's a certain percentage of shows, maybe 20%, that are the lightning in the bottle where like everybody loves and is in love with them. And those are the ones we fast track. You want to get those on sooner than later. But the majority of shows are like the majority of people. Not everyone appeals to everyone. Not every design style appeals to everyone. And so it becomes a conversation, and we really talk through it as a team about like, what is the appeal? Why do you feel so strongly that you love them? Why do you feel so strongly that you don't? Like, we really have the conversation, and we try to sculpt it and come up with something that works. I remember coming up with the concept for Battle on the Beach was an internal idea. And what we thought would make that show really fun is that there are a lot of competition shows. There's a lot of places that you could find competition. But what if there was a show with rundown, inexpensive beach shacks where you get to be mentored by your favorite HGTV stars? Suddenly, if you like the stars, you're watching for them. If you're a fan of the beach, you're watching from that. Mm-hmm. If you want to flip your own home, there's a reason to watch. You know, we're constantly thinking of like, how do you attract the audience and what are going to be the signatures of it that make it something that's worth watching?
One thing that I take away from this is that I love your passion and your go-get-em attitude where you just went for it. Like, you didn't even think about it. You're like, oh, I'm just going to go do this, or I'm going to go and try this. I'm going to fly to New York and apply for this job. And I think that a lot of people should kind of get a little bit uncomfortable, I should say. Like, get out of your skin a little bit, get uncomfortable and do something that maybe challenges you a little bit more.
Thank you. I don't mean this in hyperbole. You are the talent, the person on air that I've worked with the longest of everyone at all of HGTV.
And wow.
To me, truly, you're the first show I ever worked on there. And what that goes to show me is that kind people who are also super talented, who are great to work with, have longevity. And so if I was going to pass one message to anyone out there listening, it's like, stay true to yourself. Stay kind. It doesn't mean you're weak. Mm-hmm. Keep working on the creativity. Keep working on the design if you're a designer. Keep working on the producing if you're a producer. But stay a good person and the rewards will come and the longevity will be there. It's a marathon. It's not a race. Like, we could be in this for the long haul. And I just think that I'm so proud of you. And I love that we're still so not only working together, but such good friends after all these years is so meaningful. And it's just, I like when good things happen to good people. And so I'm thrilled for you.
Exactly that. It's a marathon. It depends what you want, right? The quicker you rise, the quicker you fall, you know? And to me, I will always be very happy with slow and steady wins the race.
The secret that you have that I think a lot of people on camera do not have is you've always seen television as an opportunity to keep yourself out there and relevant, but you didn't see the fame as the destination. You didn't do this to become famous. You did this because you know that you are smart, you want to be successful at business, and you want to have a larger brand. And the more that people see you and the more that you're out there, the more relevant you could stay in that world. But you were not doing it to fill your heart with people you don't know or to become famous for the sake of fame. And so because of that, you're a very, very brilliant business person because you see the bigger picture of this all. And I think the people that want the fame so badly but aren't willing to do the work, that doesn't last usually very long because you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
I want to read you one thing really quick before we go. We've been friends for so long, and I really wanted to have this conversation that other people could really learn from and gain from. So I was thinking, I'm like, do I know Lauren as well as I think I do? Like, what don't I know about Lauren? Because I don't know. Like, I don't know what I don't know about you, and I've known you for 20 years. So I had text Brian Baltazar. Did he tell you this?
No.
I text him, and I had asked him, I was like, listen, I'm going to be interviewing Lauren on my podcast. And I said, you probably know him better than anyone. I said, besides David, I go, you and David probably know him better than anyone. And he wrote to me, he goes, I feel like you probably know him just as well as I do. Truly. You probably know about his long history with game shows, from working on them to being on them, including Love Connection, Wheel of Fortune, Supermarket Sweep, and so many more. You're going to love this. This is such a sweet sentiment that he wrote. He has always been the life of the party. He had a DJ business right out of high school, and he would be the one who would lead the line dancing at parties and wedding receptions. Can you think of anything more perfect? He is a great example of someone who grew into his happiest, most comfortable self. Despite all his challenges in youth, he is a classic example of success. In this case, both personal and professional, it's the best revenge. He is happy and smart and so good at what he does and is truly an expert at living his best life.
That is beautiful.
Everybody needs a friend in their life that feels that
Isn't
way
that
about
true?
Them, you know? And I just thought you'd like to hear that because all of it's
Thank
true.
Thank you. 100%. That's beautiful. Thank you for making time for me. Are you kidding? I got to talk about myself for the last hour.
I love it. I love it. Now I feel like I know almost everything. All right. I love you. Thank you. Thank you.
Love you too.
See you soon.
Bye.
The Break with Tanya Nayak, a Mudhouse Media production.